ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति।
लास्ट् टैम् वी कन्सिडर्ड् सम् इम्पोर्टेण्ट् प्रोसेसस् देट् आर् असोसियेटेड् वित् द स्टेट् आफ् मेडिटेशन् इन् दि Dharma Shastras, where in Mahasmriti, certain specific types of meditation are particularly mentioned as maybe easily graspable by the human mind. Without much of a technicality, as we have in the well-known systems of yoga practice. What exactly do we intend to achieve in meditation? This is the direction that our mind has to take while it takes a decision on this path. There is a direction which the whole spirit of the individual takes in this dedication called meditation. What is it that one expects finally? The difficulty in conceiving clearly the central or rather the final objective in meditation is a principal hindrance to any palpable success. Most of us are bodily conscious, intensely aware of this physical environment, and no human being reasonably can be expected to be unconscious of the needs of the physical body and the needs also of all the associated factors in relation to the physical body. Life of man in the world today is mostly physical and therefore materially conditioned. All the values that we attach to human existence seem to be mainly associated with the physical existence in the world, and we cannot entirely rule out the possibility, even in a fairly advanced seeker's mind, of expecting a result which will bring about such a transformation in visible existence that the pains of life in the world will be completely abolished on the surface of existence, and there will be a temporal continuance of the joys of earthly life, joys minus all the sorrows and pains concomitant with the usual life in the world. It is difficult to believe that we have no desire to live in this world. Such a thoroughgoing conviction that the conditions of life as are experienced by the physical body and this mind are worthwhile, these notions will pursue us as long as we are in a peculiar network constituted of spatial extension, temporal succession, and causally related object relationship. With all our efforts, this threefold notion of involvement cannot easily be avoided from our consciousness. an extension to limitless expanse in a spatial sense would be certainly a desire, because it means complete authority over the whole world and universe perhaps. And complete authority over the whole universe, not for a few minutes only, but for endless period, that is to extend one's aspiration to a succession of time which will have no limit. Nevertheless, it is an aspiration for a life in space and in time, and also in relation to things. So the causal and spatio-temporal concept seems to be at the back, propelling even our consciousness in its attempt to fix a goal for its meditative practice. These are fundamental difficulties, apart from minor problems like the hesitancy of the mind in stepping into the discipline of self-control, for instance. Manusmriti, Yajnavalka Smriti and other certain dharma shastras have a method which is mentioned also in the Yoga Vasishtha at some place. The idea of space, time and objects cannot leave us. Let the idea be there, it does not matter. But we can utilize this idea for setting at naught the binding character of this idea. It is, as we have been told again and again, not the world as such that is a source of bondage, but our peculiar notion about it that binds us. So, the notion of space, time and causal relation is what is to be put to a complete trans-evaluational test, so that it matters little for us whether there is space or time or whether there is causal relation. What matters is something else. Our connection with this so-called world of space, time and causal relation. We receive the impact of the world and we react in a corresponding manner to this world of such an involvement and structure. This impact we feel in ourselves from the world outside is what bothers us. Conversely, the reaction that we are forced to project forth from our own selves as a counterbalancing activity in respect of the response from the world, as this impetus mentioned. This physical body is no doubt there. Let us take for granted that it is there. Let us reduce this physical body into its components. This is one method of meditation. To understand a thing would be to reduce that thing to its fundamentals. The basic common factor in a particular object, the substance out of which it is made, is really what the thing is. The value of the object, therefore, basically consists in the substance out of which it is made. What is the substance out of which this body is made? It is made up of the well-known elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether. Now comes the meditational touch in this analysis. If this body is made up of these five elements, and it is also well known that the whole world is made up of these five elements only, what is the relationship between our body and the physical world outside? This is a stroke of meditation. And what does this stroke achieve? It abolishes immediately the difference between the physical body and the physical world outside. This is a basic and important achievement though it looks so simple, it is indeed very revolutionary. Because the entire business of life is an action and reaction process between the physically conditioned individual and the physical world outside. This action and reaction process would be completely ruled out and would lose all its significance or meaning if the very need for such an action or reaction would not arise due to the fact that there is no difference in the constitutional essence of either the world outside or the body which is said to be located in the physical world. In fact, in this analysis, what we would realize is that the physical body is not in the world, it is just the world itself. It is not different from the physical world because all pervading space is in this body also, which causes the dimension of the body. There is air, there is heat, there is water, there is the solid earthly substance. The physical body and the physical world relate themselves in a non-relational manner. It appears as it were the physical body has melted down into its constitutive substance, namely the fivefold element, earth, water, fire, air, ether. But we are not merely the body, we are many other things also inside us. The human element, constitution, is a complex of several layers placed one over the other or one inside the other as it were. And these layers are the well-known ones, annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, vijnanamaya, anandamaya, koshas. The physical body, the vital, the mental and the intellectual and the call. This breath that we breathe is the air that is pervading the whole world. It is not a property of our own as if it is our individual prerogative. The air, the breath is the very same substance that moves about in the world externally, and therefore the vital being in us also is commensurate with this airy substance. And not only that, the vital energy which pumps up this breath in a fivefold fashion, known as the five pranas, this vital energy also is a drop, as it were, in the oceanic force of the world outside, considering the fact that five elements are reducible to forces. Finally, these forces being called tanmatras, chabda sparsha rupa rasa gandha. Chabda sparsha rupa rasa gandha are Sanskrit words implying the potentials of the various sensations with which we are accustomed. The sensation of hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting and touching constitute the world of experience. These sensations are the world for us practically. If these sensations were not to be there, there would not be a world of experience for us. Minus the sensation of hearing, minus the sensation of seeing, tasting, smelling and touching, what would be the world? Just imagine you cannot have any sensation of any kind. Neither you can feel anything by sense of touch, nor you can see, nor you can taste, nor you can smell. Nor is there any conceivable sensation. Will there be a world for you? The world will not be there. The world is only a bundle of sensational reactions. These sensations are the internal responses to outward potencies called energy patterns in modern language, called the tanmatras in ancient language. These energy patterns are the electromagnetic configurations of modern science, are to some extent comparable to the ancient description of these forces by the designations of Shabda, Sparsha, Rupa, Rasa, Gandha. These energies are really not five energies, they are five ways in which they impinge on the locations of our personality known as the sense organs. The same energy strikes our personality in five different centers, and five different sensations are generated within us. One and the same world is experienced in five ways because of the fivefold aperture, as it were, through which our consciousness operates in this world of experience. Thus, considering the fact that the internal prana is the very same pressurized energy packed up in the physical body due to Prarabdha Karma, the same energy that is pervading everywhere, the pranic body, the vital body, the pranamaya sharira, pranamaya kosha, ceases to have any distinction with the world of energy also. Thus, should you meditate, deeply be seated in one posture and dissolve this body in the five elements. Earth goes to earth, water goes to water, fire goes to fire, air goes to air, and space goes to space. It is as if you have paid off all your debts and you have nothing to do with your creditors. They will not stand at your door. They will not be objects of perception anymore. Creditors become objects of perception as long as they are concerned with you as external somethings. So long as you have not paid your debts, you have paid the debts and discharged all your owings to these so-called objects called the creditors. They will not be any more creditors, they will be your friends from that day onwards. They will not be harassing objects, they will be your own kith and kin, because the relationship of give and take is abolished after the discharge of the debts that you owe to these external media of sensation. The body is made up of five elements only. Thus, the mind concentrate upon this fact. Deeply should we cogitate with intense feeling that on the departure of the prana from this body, it shall be dissolved into the five elements. Therefore, it is now also the five elements only. It does not dissolve just now because it is maintained in a position by the energy of the psychic and the pranic concentrated intention to live in this body only. There is a desire potential, and that desire potential, as long as it is not satisfied, will keep this organism intact, will not allow it to dissolve. When its task is performed, it shall quit this cage and it shall not anymore protect it, and it shall not maintain its balance or position. The whole edifice will collapse. The cementing factor will be withdrawn. then all the bricks will fall one after the other as if the building was not there at all. This is the way in which dissolution will take place of the five elements of the body with the five elements of the world. Therefore, these bodies of the human beings are not beautiful things. They are just vehicles manufactured by a desire potential inside at a particular purpose. There is neither beauty nor fragrance nor anything of the kind in this body. It is as much valuable as mud and stone. That is this body, and I dissolve it, and I do not anymore remain as an isolated little mud pot. The mud pot is dissolved into the earth of which it is made. Mrityake eva satyam, says the Upanishad. There is no pot. The pot is only clay. When you touch a pot, you are touching clay only. And therefore, when you touch this body, you are touching the world of five elements. You are not touching a person. There is no person there, and in the same way as pot is not there. The pot is only a spatio-temporal shape. Similarly, this body that you call your own is a spatio-temporal shape. It is only an akara shape, and therefore it is not a thing. A shape cannot be considered a thing. And the pot is only a shape, it is not a substance by itself, the substance being only clay. So this body has no special meaning to us. The meaning is only the meaning that we have with the world as a whole. By meditation, the body has to be dissolved in the five elements. The prana is dissolved in the energy. The mind goes to the cosmic mind in a similar manner, and all the deities mentioned in the scriptures presiding over the sense organs resort to their originals. There are divinities presiding over the various sense organs, and the superintendent over these little organs or limbs of the body and take care of their proper working as long as they are to form integral constituents of the individuality. When the purpose of the individuality is fulfilled, the deities withdraw themselves. As birds fly in different directions, deities withdraw themselves. And the eyes cannot see, ear cannot hear, and there will be no sensation at the time of the withdrawal of these energies. Our mind is only a pressure of consciousness. It is a concentrated form of awareness only. It is not general consciousness, but a particularly directed consciousness at a point in space and in time. So, concentrated consciousness lodged in a location of space and time is mind. And freed from the shackles of spatial and temporal relationship, the mind becomes general consciousness. So, the mind that seems to be my vehicle or instrument of thinking is also a drop, as it were, in the oceanic cosmic mind. There is only one mind in the whole world. As the physical world is a single unit, the energy is one. As prana, so is the mind a single thinking substance. It is an organic mentation which is ubiquitous, present everywhere, in everything, animate or inanimate, conscious or unconscious. In unconscious animals and inanimate substances, it is in a sleeping and dreaming condition. But nevertheless, it is there as mind is present in inactive condition, even in human beings, in sleep and a semi-dreamy condition. So, the individual mind is to be dissolved in the cosmic mind. The great disciple of Acharya Shankara, Sureshwara, has written a small poem called Pranavartika. It is a beautiful composition of 60 or 62 verses, in which his main teaching is only this much. When the physical body is dissolved in the physical universe, you step into the realm of Virat. The Virat is the physically conscious universality. The whole physical universe becoming aware that it is. Now, this is a difficult thing for the ordinary mind to conceive, because for ordinary conception, the world is always an outside object, but the Virat is not an external object. The Virat is not an object because this subject, so-called the individual person, is also a part of this Virat. So the thinker and the thought of get together in a merging of their separate features of internality and externality. Vishwa is merged in Virat. Vishwa is the name we give to the waking consciousness aware of the physical body as its self. We are under the impression that the body is the self in the waking state. This condition of consciousness, where it is enmeshed in the notion of its being just the body only physically, is the Vishwa. This Vishwa consciousness has to be merged in the Virat or Vaishyanara consciousness. This is one step of meditation. And the vital body, the prana mentioned, the energy layer and the mental layer, both put together, constitute the subtle body or the linga deha, and this has to be offered to its cosmical counterpart, as we did in the earlier stage of the offering of the physical in the cosmical physical. As the consciousness involved in the physical body is called the Vishwa, the same consciousness involved in the subtle body or the astral body, making itself felt actively in the dreaming condition particularly, is called Taijasa in the language of the Upanishads. This Taijasa consciousness of the subtle body should be offered to the subtle consciousness of the cosmical being, Hiranyagarbha. Vishwa is united with Vaishyanara or Virat. Taijasa is united with Sutratma, Hiranyagarbha or Mahaprana, as it is usually called. So these very valuable things we consider as associated with the physical body are together offered in this jnana yajna we perform by means of the surrender and melting away, as it were, of the physical consciousness in the cosmical physical consciousness. Virat Swarupa, Vaishyanara, Vaishyanara consciousness. Likewise, our subtle body is offered to the subtle consciousness, Hiranyagarbha consciousness. Then what remains in us? The physical is the waking, the subtle is the dreaming, and we have the causal condition which is experienced by us in the sleep state. That is the potential of individuality in us that is known in the language of the Upanishads as prajna, that consciousness of prajna has to be offered up in the cosmical counterpart of it known as Ishvara. These are the usually known terms associated with these conditions, universally known as Vaishvanara or Virat, Hiranyagarbha and Ishvara, and individually known as Vishva, Tayasa and Prajna. So we have nothing with us except these three layers, which are further subdivided into the five minor layers known as the Annamaya, Pranamaya, Manomaya, Vijnanamaya, Anandamaya, Koshas. Compactly, they are the Sthula Sharira, Sukshma Sharira, and the Karana Sharira, or the physical, the astral, or the subtle, and the causal bodies. These are the processes described by way of meditation in the epics and the Puranas many a time. You see it described in the Mahabharata, in the Bhagavata Mahapurana, in the Vishnu Purana, in the Manusmriti, and so on. There is not much of a strain of thinking here, an easy process. Whatever I have does not belong to me. And whatever I am, apparently, that also does not seem to be really me. It looks like that. It is very clear that my property is really not my property. The house, the money, and the land, and everything that is socially connected to me is really not mine. I leave it one day and go independently. A little bit of thought will reveal that this is the truth. But it is difficult to know that we are not the body also, not the mind and not the prana. There is something else. So while it is necessary to cast away all our associations with what is known as the Gaunatma. Gaunatma means the association of the self with beloved things. Husband and wife, son, daughter, relations, money, property, everything belonging. Whatever you call your belonging or relation is called Gaunatma. It is Gauna because it is secondary self, it is not a real self. You cannot say son is a real self, though the father loves the son intensely. So is the case with everything that you love intensely. You may love it, but it cannot be you. So to regard it as you foolishly would be a sort of illusion being hugged. So it is called a secondary self, not a major self or a primary self. So Gaunatman, which is the secondary self, has to be abandoned first. Then comes this other Atman, which is falsely assumed to be the real self, namely this so-called psycho-physical organism. It is called Mithyatman because it is not true. This body, this mind, this prana are not me. That we possess these or I possess these is an illusion. Already it has been shown by a little of understanding and analysis that these elements constituting the body, the prana, the mind belong to somebody else. Therefore, to imagine them to be mine would be illusion. So they are called Nityatma, illusory selves. It is like the bank manager imagining that the whole money is his. It is an illusory assumption of property. Absolutely illusory because it is not his property. Likewise is this illusion of our body being ours. So while the external relationships are secondary and they are set at naught at one stroke as meaningless even to a little understanding and the exercise of some common sense, it is a little more difficult to understand that the body is an illusion. It is an illusion because the idea that it is yours is illusion. Why is it an illusion? Because it is made up of the same substance out of which the world is made. Therefore, it does not belong to you. It belongs to the world. And all the things that we have as the three bodies also belong to the world in its three planes, physical, astral and cause. Corresponding to Bhurloka, Bhurloka, Swarloka, Bhur, Vasva, we say sometimes when we chant the Gayatri Mantra, for instance, these Yahratis, Bhur, Vasva, represent the three layers of the cosmos. Corresponding to the internal layers, mentioned already, the physical, subtle and the cause. Or, the seven planes mentioned, Bhuloka, Bhurloka, Sarloka, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapoloka, Satyaloka, being subdivisions or interpretations in a different way of these very three planes mentioned already, correspond again to the layers inside. Yoga, for instance, seven chakras, the nerve centers, and the koshas mentioned already. Whatever way you imagine yourself to be, whether threefold or sevenfold or whatever it is, the individuality seems to be a presentation of borrowed property, and therefore it is shining in somebody's colors, like washerwomen sometimes going to marriage parties with saris of somebody else. And goldsmiths also do this trick many a time. If you give some necklace for repair, the missus of the goldsmith will use it for a few days to parade her beauty in a function in her own locality. But this beauty has no meaning. This necklace is not hers, this sari is not hers, and so therefore it is an illusory presentation of one's importance and significance whatsoever. So the individual has no significance, finally it is a zero. And if the whole world is nothing but value associated with individuals, it also becomes zero. With all these illusions attached to individual personalities, the world value also goes like a huge illusion. And these methods may be employed in meditation so that the consciousness may get detached from its false associations with imaginary conditions it has created, manufactured, like silkworm manufacturing cocoons around itself for its own bondage. These methods of meditation are deeply psychic processes of intense affirmation of consciousness. And while this is one way, a direct attack, as it were, a frontal attack on the circumstance of one's relationship with the whole universe, there is also a devout and humble method of adoration by which also by means of atma samarpana or surrender of one's personality to the cosmic being the very same purpose is achieved. This Virat, this Hiranyagarbha, this Ishvara that we have spoken of as universal realities with which our individualities have to be communed and in which have to be dissolved are also objects of worship. They are divinities, gods whom we may adore. In meditation, you do not suddenly plunge into this experience at one stroke. Though whatever has been told you just now in these minutes may look like an act of sudden involvement in the cosmical existence, in practice you will find it is not a sudden act. It cannot take place so quickly, though while explaining it has been made to appear as if it is an immediate act that can be achieved at one stroke. It is a slow process of inward communion. Now here comes into the surface of our appreciation and understanding the value of the different methods of yoga known as Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga, Jnana. The sudden immersion of yourself in the cosmical existence by the force of affirmation in the manner explained may be considered to be the method of Jnana Yoga. If you have that strength, do it. In a minute it can be done. But there is a gradational psychic effort involved in the process of one's attempt to unite one's layers with the cosmical layers. These gradational processes of one's endeavor to gradually identify one's layers with the cosmical layers may be said to constitute the method of Patanjali's eightfold path, Ashtanga Yoga. So the very same thing becomes Jnana Yoga, the very same thing becomes Raja Yoga of Patanjali. It can also become Bhakti Yoga at the same time, because these things mentioned, Virat, Hiranyagarbha, Ishvara, are not sudden presentations before human consciousness. They reveal themselves little by little as divinities transcending the lower levels gradually one by one. These transcendent divinities to which we have made reference many a time in our earlier sessions and which we have called Adhidaiva, presiding principles superior to and transcending the subject and the object, connecting the two together, that Adhidaiva presents itself before you as your God. That is your Mahaganapati, that is your Vishnu, that is your Shiva, that is your Devi, that is whatever your God is. But the concept of God becomes wider and wider as these transcending divinities start swallowing more and more of the objective universe into themselves and their expanse increases from all sides. As if you are going to reach out the horizon itself and gulp out the entire space. In the earlier stages of meditation, you will find that your concept of God is that of some anthropomorphic or localized conceptual being only. That God which is conceived by you as something placed before you cannot suddenly feel a oneness with it. However much you may struggle, it will be outside you only. Even if you believe that the whole world is one with you and you are identical with it, subtly you will feel it is outside only, you are seeing it with your eyes. So the God whom you worship and pray to will be an outside object for the time being. And in intensity of meditation, you will feel the presence of that one being filling all space afterwards. Like the one who sees suns everywhere after having gazed at the sun for a long time. Look at the sun for a few minutes, don't spoil your eyes. You will find sun everywhere. All places, white orbs, dazzling because of the impact of the gaze on the eyes. So the one Sri Krishna, one Christ, one form of this God or that God will be seen to be filling the whole cosmos like forests filled with trees. Everywhere you see trees and trees and trees and nothing but trees in a vast forest. Likewise, you will find and feel that the entire space is filled with these gods. And not many gods, but the one form manifesting itself as manifold and infinite in its diversification. Further intensity of concentration will dissolve this multiplicity into a bliss, as if all ornaments have been melted into a one nugget of gold, or a huge mass of gold. These beautiful forms that you saw filling all space were like beautiful ornaments made up of same gold. No doubt, it is gold, but they are varieties, and therefore there is a beauty in seeing variety. But they will melt down completely into the substance out of which they came from, and you will find a bliss. The whole sky will be radiant with sunlight. It is as if the whole sky has become the sun. And you can imagine what that vision could be. The sun is now at one spot in the sky, blazing before your eyes. But if the entire space, the all-pervading sky itself is the sun, what would be the vision? Such would be the vision of that merging of the divinity in a diversified form into that cosmical menstrual. This is something like what they call Sankalpa Samadhi. Then you will feel a faint presence of yourself as an individual contemplating this vast radiance. Then this contemplative unit also melts down its own substance into this radiance that is all pervading. That is the utter surrender of the self in God, to God. This is Parabhakti in the language of the Bhakti Shastras. And though in a prosaic manner I have described these stages in a few sentences, when you actually practice these stages, you will find you will pass through thrills after thrills, ecstasies after ecstasies, horripilations after horripilations, sweatings and tremors, and ejaculations of consciousness as if you are drowned in degrees of joy ranging one above the other. These are some of the experiences in the implementation of the art of love of God. Bhakti Yoga, described in Bhakti Rasayana and Satchita Shastras, the ecstasies and the different stages of the devotee's experience are faintly explained to us in the writings of saints and sages, like the writings of Saint Teresa of Avila in her interior castle. one of the beautiful masterpieces we have in mystical literature in the world, Interior Chasm. Seven stages of ascent of the spirit of the individual to the Godhead. And we have such descriptions in the Vasishtha. And we have such wondrous ecstatic descriptions in some of the writings of the Tamil saints, Manika Vashiva and others. And the various saints of all the times and climes describe the glory of this God being the object of the spirit and the spirit being possessed by God. So, one and the same object can become the ideal for these methods you call jnana or psychic concentration or meditation or bhakti, devotion, intense love and feeling for the Almighty. Some of these are described in the Srimad Bhagavata Mahapurana and as mentioned in Manuskriti, the Mahabharata and the Yoga Vasishtha. Hayom Tatsa. Om Purna Madha 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 Purna Madha